Hello, you're listening to the CDZ of Movies. My name is The Colin. I am the C. Did I say my name is The Colin? I think I did. With me is Colin. The Zijan.
Who's the Z? Hey, Colin. Speak again.
We do. I'm messing up the intro every single time now. This is my new thing. We've been seeing a lot of each other recently, Zijan.
A lot. Way too much.
I think
not seeing a lot of each other, though, to be fair. Like, every other week we speak to each other.
It's true, but now we're seeing each other. It's lovely.
Yeah, it has been. It's been quite fun, to be fair.
It's been good times.
I've learned one more Muse song. That's very much it.
Yeah, we went to see Muse, which was a great gig. Well, I saw all of it.
I saw part of it.
And I got home very late because I'm too old to be getting home at 2:15.
You're fine. You don't work on Mondays anyway, Colin.
That is very true. I don't work on Mondays. Maybe we could segue in or move slowly towards a podcast where I give my tips about how to live life. my first tip is, if you can afford to, go down to 4 days a week. Or maybe three. Maybe two.
Is that your next plan then?
Who knows? Who knows? Maybe I'll just keep chopping days off.
Yeah, one by one. You just work 1 day a week.
My other tip is you can cook bacon in a George Foreman grill.
How have you been doing that?
How have I been doing it?
Yeah.
You just put bacon in the grill and then turn it on.
It means the same thing, right? What's the difference?
I'm just saying, you can cook it, you don't have to do it in a, it's quicker than
I don't understand it. This tip whatsoever.
It's quicker than doing it in a under a grill in your oven. Just do it in George Foreman.
I don't think you've added any value to our listeners.
I think I have. Email in if after this podcast you cook your bacon in a George Foreman grill and realize it makes it nice and crispy and takes much less time.
Wow.
That's my little tip. You got any tips, Ishan?
No, I prefer to say nothing. It's probably better than that. You're not that anyway. So.
Wow. Some people create, some people destroy, you know? today we're looking at the film Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1, otherwise known as Mission Impossible 7. We're also looking back at Mutiny on the Bounty, but making sure we're watching the right one.
And yes.
Doing a quiz on the Christopher Reeve Superman films and much more. We start, as we always do, with movie news. Zijan, what's been going on?
I mean, the biggest news, and it's a very big piece of news, right, is that the actors are on strike now.
Yeah.
No one's working in Hollywood anymore.
The writers have gone.
The actors are gone.
Who else is there, really?
I mean, the big shots who have all the money, right, who are not paying out the money and not... Yeah.
Oh, we're taking a stance, are we?
I am. I'm definitely supporting like the working people.
Okay.
Yeah, and not the people financing the films.
So I'm slightly torn because I think the reason they're striking, among other things, is apparently there's a thing in the contract they try to put out saying that they could just, the studios could take a scan of background actors and then use their likeness forever based on day's pay. That's bad.
That's bad. Very Black Mirror-ish, you know? It's like, it's actually the first episode, the most recent Black Mirror, is exactly the plot of that.
On the other hand, I don't think there's a lot of money swimming around when Netflix are billions of dollars in debt and everyone's struggling to get by. So, I don't know. I just want to see some films. So, I guess it'd be nice if they worked it all out.
Yeah, what this means is probably going to be a drought in films, but I don't know when that will hit us.
Yeah, I guess anything filming now, like if it's a small budget film, it tends to be filmed a few months before release, I guess. If it's a bigger budget one, it could be years. I mean, Mission Impossible was filming for 4 years, right?
That has really been done. I know, like, things like the big blockbusters, like the Marvels,
I don't think the next one is done, because they originally were going to be filming the Mission Impossibles back to back.
Is it not?
But I think they moved away from that. So I did read a thing saying it's. Huh. I mean, they've done. It's not like they've done some of it. Maybe most of it. I don't know how much, but it's not finished, I don't think. So the Marvels is done.
Yep.
But part of the strike means that actors aren't doing promotional stuff either. So there's not going to be any of these eating hot wings whilst talking about the Marvels or playing
categories or something. I love hot ones interviews. I think they are wonderful. I think they are so good. But good news is we get to see Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling still doing all their promos for Barbie.
That's all in the can. Yeah.
But they did most of it before the strike, I think. That's why.
Because apparently Cillian Murphy just, and maybe Emily Blunt, just left the Oppenheimer
London premiere. Yeah.
At some point, just sitting there watching a film isn't working, is it? Maybe it is. Oh, they've probably seen it 10 times already. Mm. I guess it's good news for British film, because British actors aren't in SAG-AFTRA.
Unless they are dual memberships.
Yeah. I suppose, are they still allowed to make films in Britain if they're not making them for Hollywood?
I have no idea.
I don't know. Anyway,
I don't know how it works.
No, we're not the people to come to for informed discussion of this, but it's going to have a big impact. And not a good one unless they all get around the table and figure it out pretty quickly.
I was just reading, SAG-AFTRA not only just encompasses actors, they also do video game voice performers, radio presenters, models, and YouTube influencers.
Well, at least there's some good news. All right. One film that is hopefully done is Deadpool 3. Is it done?
I think
it's filmed, but they haven't done the kind of the overdubbing, which they were going to. I think because of the writer's strike, they were going to fix a lot of stuff in post, and now I guess they can't do that either. So maybe it's not done. But we have seen the first footage, or the first image rather, of Hugh Jackman in this film, and he's wearing the yellow Wolverine suit.
Yeah, made famous in the original comics and more famously in the animated series in the 90s.
La, 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 la.
Great
la,
tune. La, la. What a banger.
Yeah. I watched the first couple of episodes of that the other day and I was like, this is for kids. But if I watched it when I was a kid, I'm sure I'd have loved it.
Yeah, it was great when I was young.
I blame my parents. That possibly listen to this, but probably not.
He not only is wearing the yellow and blue suit, he also has hair styled backwards like the Wolverine style. Yeah,
and he's got the beard that he had in Origins, I think, but I don't know if that's just because it's a Wolverine beard, kind of a little bit shaved in the middle. He doesn't have the mask with the big pointy bits though.
No, the pointy bits is always weird, isn't it? Though, like, why would you have those pointy bits there? It makes no sense.
It's like, maybe it's disguising that guy who has hair that shape. Yeah, I mean, shows like, I don't know how much Wolverine was trying to disguise himself in general.
I don't think he has anything to hide, does he? Why would he?
No, I guess you might want some anonymity because you're going around attacking bad guys and stuff. But yeah, because it kind of. One of the theories had been that Hugh Jackman was playing himself in this film, which might still be true if he's playing multiple versions. But I'm assuming they didn't put him in the costume. Do you think he's going to remove the sleeves?
Yes.
Must do, surely.
Yeah, come on.
We've seen all these pictures of him back in the gym. He's not doing that to put on a...
Yeah, to put on a full spandex suit.
Anyway, I'm very excited by Deadpool 3. I just hope that it doesn't get pushed back too far.
Are you excited by the fact that Jennifer Garner is coming back as well?
Yeah, I mean, I like Jennifer Garner. I watched the first 5 minutes or so of Elektra and thought, no, this looks terrible. but I liked her in Daredevil, I guess, which the director's cut isn't bad. Isn't bad. And I have also enjoyed her in films like 13 Going on 30. I don't think she's going to be playing that character.
No, definitely not. But yeah, for those who don't know, Jennifer Garner is returning in Deadpool 2. Not Deadpool 2, Deadpool 3.
Yeah.
As Elektra.
And there have been a lot of rumours. I've been trying to avoid them because I don't really want spoilers, and often rumours turn out to be true. But I knew that Ben Affleck had already been rumoured to be coming back as Daredevil. So it would be weird to get Jennifer Garner and not get Ben Affleck.
Yeah, of course, right? Like,
and they still get on, right?
I don't know. I don't follow tabloids.
You're not up to date on the Garner Affleck divorce?
No, of course not. Although I've seen pictures of the weddings, the new weddings.
Oh, the Jennifer Lopez wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Was Jennifer Garner there?
I don't do that. I don't celebrity spot, Colin.
No.
Yeah.
Well, okay. But me neither. But I'm sure that they're all pros, so they'll put it behind them. But how long ago was Elektra? Elektra must be 20 years ago. Maybe
that's a while back in the early in it was in the 2000s, right?
Yeah, because I think X-Men was about 99, was it? Mm. Something like that. And this would have been after X-Men 3, I think, maybe. Anyway, early noughties, probably. Superman Legacy, speaking of more superhero films, has got some casting news. So last time we talked about the new cast for the big two, for Clark and Lois. We've got a few more. I imagine these will be fairly minor, probably, given when they've been announced, but I could be wrong. Nathan Fillion, of course, James Gunn's buddy, is going to be appearing as Guy Gardner, one of the Green Lanterns.
Yes.
One would assume, based on Nathan Fillion's history of kind of fairly minor cameo roles in James Gunn stuff, that he's not going to be the main Green Lantern if we get one. Presumably it's going to be a bit like Michael Douglas in Ant-Man. He's going to be the mentor character for Hal Jordan, perhaps. Something like that. I don't know enough about the history of Green Lanterns, really.
No, Guy Gardner came later than Hal Jordan in the history of the comics. But yeah, you're right that I don't think he'll be a big character. I mean, this is supposed to be a Superman film. It's a Superman legacy film. And I find it weird, if any of these characters would show up for, a huge scene.
I mean, some of these, I think they probably are with one eye on spin-offs, but I don't think we're getting a Nathan Fillion spin-off Green Lantern. We might get a Green Lantern Corps. I know they've talked about that before. So he might play it in multiple films.
Guy Gardner is known to be the most abrasive of all of the Green Lanterns. He comes across as arrogant and very rude. So it's probably quite a big departure for what Nathan Fillion plays, because he usually plays the charming, happy-go-lucky guy.
He is fairly charming, isn't he? We've also got Eddie or Edie Gathegi, not an actor I know, but he's playing Mr. Terrific. Do you know who Mr. Terrific is?
Apparently, he's one of the world's most brilliant inventors and tacticians.
How many inventors do we need?
As many as you can patrol.
All right. And we have Isabel Merced, or possibly Merced, playing Hawkgirl, an actress I actually have seen in quite a few things. I've seen her in 4 films, I think, 2 of which are good. So she was in Let It Snow, which is a really nice Christmas movie from a few years ago. Rosaline, which I've talked about before. Instant Family and Sweet Girl. So she gets around, but she's also in Madam Web, in an as-yet-undisclosed role.
If that even happens, man.
Yeah. So she's looks like she's kind of hedging her bets superhero-wise. But she's playing Hawkgirl. Hawkgirl fans of the CW would have seen Hawkgirl in that. I think in Legends of Tomorrow, if I remember rightly.
Yeah, Legends of Tomorrow. And small trivia, Baryndos, who plays Hawkgirl in Legends of Tomorrow, played Rita in Groundhog Day, the musical, on Broadway.
Oh, was that her? Oh, no, yeah. On Broadway. Okay.
On Broadway.
No, cool. In which case, I have her in soundtrack.
Yeah, you do.
She didn't do a lot of singing in the CW. So I'm sure we'll get more and more casting for Superman Legacy as time wears on, because it's still fairly early days for this.
I don't really want that many characters in the Superman film, to be honest.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. Like, you want to be different from the other Superman films that's been out so far, but I mean, it's really like, what, 4 superheroes in the Superman film already. So
yeah, I mean, other than Batman v Superman and Justice League, we've never had a Superman film where there are other heroes around, are there? Have we?
That's true.
Don't want to have spoilers too much for the Christopher Reeve quiz we're doing, but there's always been he's the only superhero and there are villains around. And obviously, we all remember the throwaway line in Batman and Robin, which, of course, George Clooney said, this is why Superman works alone, suggesting that he's around there somewhere. But, as you say, trying to do something a bit different. He's coming to Earth, it's already filled with heroes. I think it's kind of interesting, I suppose, to see how will heroes react when someone is just more powerful than all of them put together.
Yeah.
Rocks up. I don't know Mr. Terrific, but these don't look like they're massively powered heroes, do they?
No, but Green Lantern's powers are always very, very, depending on the writer.
Yeah.
Really. So, yeah. Who knows?
That's true. Can you make anything green? He's like, I want a green Superman. Boom, done.
Yeah, yeah. Anything. Yeah. Whatever his imagination dictates, really, ultimately. Yeah. Okay, I'm out of superhero news.
Fair enough.
My next bit of news is that Greta Gerwig is directing 2 Narnia movies for Netflix.
Yeah, this is a surprise.
It surprised me too. I didn't know this was happening. Greta Gerwig, who is just finished directing Barbie, which we spoke about. Yep. And it's coming out, and we'll be speaking about it in our next podcast as well. Spoiler alert.
Mm.
How many Narnia films has there been already?
They made three, I think. So they made Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, Prince Caspian, and Voyage of the Dawn Treader. I say they, I can't remember which studio it was. I didn't think it was a... I think the first one was with Disney and then someone else bought it, or maybe the first two were Disney and then someone else bought it. But I had no idea that Netflix had any association with this. Maybe the rights came up again. Mm. There was a much-loved BBC series from, I think, the early 90s. I definitely watched it in the 90s. I don't know whether it was the first time around or whether it was repeat, so it might be from the 80s, but I think it was from the 90s.
Have you read the books?
Yeah, a few times, yeah. Mm. They were when I was baptized. I was given the Narnia books as a gift and read them later.
So. Ah, I've only read the main one, the famous one, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Mm. So.
Yeah, and we don't know yet which two movies is going to be, like whether it's going to be. I'm not sure she's going to go back to Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, but it is so much more famous than any of the others. Maybe she will.
It's not the first book anyway, right? The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
It's not the first chronology. It's the first one he wrote. And then Magician's Nephew was a prequel, mostly. But yeah, it's by far the most famous one. And it kind of does lay the groundwork, but it's also it's the one that people are familiar with. And it's an interesting one because the films didn't do well. I mean, the first one did, but then the sequels didn't do well at all, really. And they got a good cast, but yeah.
Well, you introduced James McAvoy.
It did, didn't it? Yes.
It's a satire. Is it a satire?
Fawn.
A fawn, yeah, that's right.
Mr. Tumnus. Yeah, of course. Yeah. And I think Liam Neeson voiced Aslan, if I remember rightly.
Oh, wow.
Simon, in fact, I think Eddie Izzard and then Simon Pegg voiced Reaper Jeep. There was a young Ben Barnes played Prince Caspian.
Very young Ben Barnes.
I say young Ben Barnes. I don't think he's done much since then.
And what's his name? Who played Adam Warlock?
Will Poulter.
Yeah, Will Poulter. Yeah. Young Will Poulter.
Played Eustace. Yeah.
I mean, this wouldn't be the first time Greta Gerwig is adapting a book into a film. Anyway, she did Little Women.
Of course she did.
I know you've not seen. But
I have seen it, mate. I have seen it.
What?
I know.
Why?
Everyone was saying how good it was.
And?
It's better than the book. Still terrible. No, it's not terrible. I didn't like it. I hated the book. I didn't like it.
Yeah, because you didn't like the source material, right? So
yeah, but everyone was like, oh, it's so good. So I thought, okay, maybe I'll give it a chance. Yeah, I once walked past Anna Popplewell on a bridge. She played Susan in the movies. That's my claim to fame.
Wow.
Yeah.
I walked past.
I didn't actually know.
What's her last name?
Anna Popplewell.
Where has she been in?
She played Susan in the Narnia films.
Apart from that?
That's it, really.
How do you know it was her?
I didn't actually recognise her, but Simon was with me, and she was a student at Oxford. And after we walked past, he said, that was Anna Popplewell.
Well, that's a horrible claim to fame.
Yeah, fair enough. I'm intrigued. I'm sure I'll be back on Netflix at some point, so I'll see what's going on there. But it wouldn't surprise me if she just does a two, like she just splits Lord of the Rings and Wardrobe into two and directs that.
Yeah, that makes more sense, right?
We'll see. Speaking of Netflix, there's going to be a Sylvester Stallone documentary coming out later this year. The trailer is already out. I don't think it'd be announced before they just leapt in with the trailer, which looks interesting. It looks quite downbeat from the trailer. There's a lot of him talking about failure and not achieving what he set out to, what he hoped to achieve. Which is interesting. I don't know whether they've just picked a few clips from it and most of it isn't like that. I don't know. But I've always thought Sylvester Stallone was phenomenal in Rocky, and he had a Best Actor nomination, and he was kind of being compared with Robert De Niro and stuff at that time. And then his career went very much a different direction to that. It's kind of just action man with very few words and just kind of lots of beat 'em ups and things. And I do think there is an interesting way his career could have gone. And maybe just Rocky was the one character that he could put that level of emotion into and that level of depth. And yeah, he hasn't. Whilst he has other popular characters, obviously Rambo, and he's very good in films like Copland, he hasn't had that kind of, definitely not a kind of De Niro-style career. So it'd be interesting to see him looking back at that. And,
did they do an Arnold Schwarzenegger documentary recently as well? Or am I just seeing
things? I think I think they, well, so Netflix, they've got him on board to do various things. I think they might have done a documentary, among other things. Mm. Yeah, I think so. But yeah, I'm intrigued to see that. I will definitely, I say, when I finally get Netflix back, I'll definitely be watching that.
We've got more casting news for Tron Ares, for people who actually care about it. Joining Evan Peters and Jared Leto is Jodie Turner-Smith.
Who's that?
No idea. I should probably Google this, but I didn't. I can't be bothered to look up Tron Ares news, Colin.
No. It's just... I'll Google it. Go on. Jodie Turner-Smith. Here we go. She was apparently in Murder Mystery 2, a movie I did kind of watch.
Isn't it the one of Jennifer Aniston?
Yeah, I had it on the background. I was not really watching it. She was in White Noise, which I did watch, and I talked about in To See or Not to Zed at one point. Queen and Slim, I've heard good things about. I've never seen it. The Neon Demon, she was in. She's done some stuff. Mm. Okay. But, yeah, I wouldn't have recognised her in a crowd. She played Anne Boleyn once in a Channel 5 series. Ice Cube has joined Dave Bautista in The Killers game. He's replaced someone, I didn't write that down, who is based around an assassin who orders a kill on himself because he thinks he has a terminal disease and wants to go out quickly, yep. Then discovers that he doesn't have a terminal disease and has to try and foil the assassination attempts, which sounds like a fun premise to me.
I'll watch anything with Dave Bautista in, to be honest.
He's great, isn't he?
I think it's good fun, so why not?
So I can't remember who was supposed to be in that before, but whoever it was has dropped out. And Ice Cube is in. I quite like Ice Cube as well. He's funny in the Jump Street movies.
There is going to be a Hollywood adaptation of The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo.
That book,
yes.
Cool. That feels like... I'm trying to remember whether Simon predicted that in one of his year-end predictions.
I think he predicted Eleanor Oliphant is completely fine. It's
going to be
made into a film. Okay. So this is one of the other books that was very popular in the past couple of years, really.
So no surprise then.
Yeah, exactly. So it's on Netflix. I've not read this. It's going to be directed by Leslie Hitlin, who I've seen hasn't been doing much directing apart from doing some work on the Star Wars Acolyte thing on Disney Plus. I don't know what that is because I don't follow Star Wars. And it's one of the key creators behind Russian Doll. So that's that.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it won't have any actors or writers, so it might not be a great film.
Not yet, anyway.
Fair enough. Zachary Levi has recently said, very recently in fact, as I record, because I follow him on Twitter, this is straight from the horse's mouth, that he's hoping to get a Chuck movie made. I don't like his chances. Did you ever watch Chuck?
I watched the first few seasons of Chuck and it was good fun.
I loved Chuck. I think it didn't quite maintain the same level of consistency throughout, but I really enjoyed it.
When did it end? It was a while back, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's a long time ago now. When would it have been? Probably, 12, 13 years ago, maybe? No, maybe less than that, actually. No, it must be less than that, maybe 10 years ago. But he's going to do one of the many rewatch podcasts that that everyone's doing these days.
It's very popular now.
Yeah, it ended in 2012, which he's hoping was going to be a kind of precursor to fans getting back on board and them making this. Apparently, someone who I don't know who it is, maybe a writer or producer or something, said he was going to do a rewatch podcast and kind of tweeted Zachary Levi to say, will you come on the show if we do that? And he's like, actually, I'm thinking of doing my own. So, and then after that, it's like, and hopefully that means we'll get a movie. So we'll see.
I don't see that happening.
I think it's a long shot.
Are there of Chuck, to be honest? Like, I know it's okay, but I don't think it's as popular as, like, Community, for example.
I don't know. I mean, I think the people who like it don't like it as much as they like Community. I think Community's got a huge cult following. But in terms of numbers of people, I think I would have guessed Chuck got more people watching it than Community did, if I had to guess. I don't know if that's true, but they both of them struggled to maintain audiences, and I think they both got rescued by Subway, now I think about it. Didn't Subway put money into both of them?
I don't know that, but
I'm fairly confident because the Community had a whole plot line where they made fun of it, where they had
the Subway guy.
And similarly in Chuck, there was a Subway store next door, and they're always going on there for their delicious chicken teriyaki and stuff. We'll see if it gets a movie. I think it's more likely to be a streaming thing, probably, but I don't know who owns it. You can watch Chuck free of charge on ITVX.
Nice. Movie studios have to be pretty careful nowadays, because like my last bit of news, both Indiana Jones and The Flash are box office bombs. The Flash actually is looking to be one of the biggest flops in Warner Brothers history.
I saw a thing that's going through like the top 10 biggest flops for Warner Brothers.
It's slated to lose over $200 million.
Because I think, something like four out of the top five or something where all the DC movies released in the last couple of years. And I think this is bad. This is bad. Yeah, because I know you didn't like it. I thought it was okay. Some people seem to really hate it. And it doesn't surprise me with all the kind of stuff going on behind the scenes that it hasn't found an audience.
Yeah.
Indiana Jones surprised me a bit more because I don't think it's getting lots of rave reviews by any means. I don't think word of mouth is going to be like, you must see this. But I thought enough people still like Indiana Jones that it would have done all right.
It's been a while since the previous film. And
people hated the previous films. Maybe that's not helping.
Yeah, that's the thing. So,
yeah.
Oh, well. That's it.
Couple of things. This is rather vague, but apparently there's been kind of slightly rumours of trouble behind the scenes at Spider-Verse, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So I thought they'd already got the second one more or less ready to go, but apparently they haven't. They were really struggling to get this one over the line, so there's a lot of work needed. And there's a kind of lot of some people saying that working far too long hours and a lot of pressure, blah, 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 and some complaints about that. So who knows what's true, what's not true in that kind of situation, but it does suggest that almost certainly, even without the strikes, they weren't expecting to make the date next March for
really?
Across
wow.
Spider-Verse, apparently. And again, none of this was substantiated particularly, but probably don't get your hopes up for...
That's very sad news, Colin. That's very sad news.
But I have some very good news, Dijon, that Tom Cruise intends to make Mission Impossible films until well into his 80s, apparently.
I mean, like, didn't you make a prediction that he'll probably die on set?
I probably should. We all thought, at some point, this was being talked about, Mission Impossible 8 was being talked about as the send-off for Ethan Hunt. But apparently that's not the case now. This might be a throwaway comment, but I think he was being interviewed around the time of Indiana Jones, and he said he'd love to keep making mission films until he's Harrison Ford's age. So,
well, good for him. I can see him doing it, though. Like, honestly, this guy is crazy.
I mean, he's doing incredible stuff at 60. Whether he's still being able to throw himself off things at 80, we'll see. But if anyone can do it...
Tom Cruise can.
Yeah. We move on then to See or Not to Zed, the segment where we talk about films recently seen and tell you the listener whether you see or not Zed them.
Yes.
Dijon.
Yes.
What have you been seeing?
Yeah. I mean, I think to the surprise of not you, really, I've been trying to catch up on sleep in the past few days. So yes. I haven't been seeing anything.
Yes, fair enough. Okay. Yeah. So, nothing. The films I have seen have largely been rewatches, but I did watch Ralph Breaks the Internet for the first time.
Have you not seen that? I thought we've discussed that before for some reason as well.
No, I've seen Wreck-It Ralph before, but I've never seen Ralph Breaks the Internet. The sequel to it, where Ralph and his little psychic, Vanellope, who are both video game characters. In the first film, they jump between a few video games. In this one, they jump into the internet. And... do various things with eBay and Amazon, and
chaos ensues.
Chaos does ensue. A Ralph-like virus takes over, and he has to learn the power of friendship or something. And they bump into all the Disney princesses in one of the greatest bits of cross-brand promotion I've ever seen in a movie.
I think that's quite fun, though.
It was actually it's probably my favorite bit.
Me too.
This film was all right, wasn't it? I'm not exactly bashing my head against the wall in regret that I didn't watch it years ago.
No, I've covered it into See or Not to Zed before as well. I think like the first film was far superior than this one. I don't think it just got its feet at all in this film. It's just, yeah, I didn't care for it.
Fair enough. I'd forgotten you'd done it, to see what I said. I didn't massively love the first film, to be honest. So I found this about the same. Oh. It's a pleasant enough way to spend a couple of hours, but I'm not going to be rushing to the cinema to see Ralph 3 if that ever happens.
I don't think that'll happen.
No. I think not. I don't really know how big a following this has got. But, it wouldn't surprise me if they were going to do it, but I'll Google it. Ralph 3, that'll do it.
You can put it in one of your predictions for...
The next story might not be a movie. What does that mean?
Probably like a Disney Plus TV series, right?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
It could... Wreck-It Ralph 3 could involve 3D printing.
No.
I don't know what that means. I'm not reading that. Okay. There you go. There's our recommendations. Maybe watch that if you want to, or don't bother. And yes. Dijon's been sleeping.
Yep.
We move on then to our main segment of the day, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. As ever, we're going to do non-spoilers, and then we're going to do spoilers. And as ever, this is the bit where I say, Zijan, tell us about the movie.
Yep. The sequel to Mission Impossible Fallout back in 2018. This is the 7th installment. After you've corrected me twice in the last podcast. I really can't keep track of the Mission Impossible series at all. There's way too many of them. So this film sees Tom Cruise returning as...
Can't count to 7. All right.
As Ethan Hunt, whose IMF team matches wits with a powerful rogue AI known as The Entity. The ensemble cast also features Hayley Atwell, Wing Rames, and Simon Pegg, and Rebecca Ferguson. Reprising their roles. Not Hayley Atwell. Hayley Atwell's new.
She's new. Yeah.
Vanessa Kirby is reprising her role as well, right? Because I'm pretty sure she was in the...
She was.
...previous yeah. film. And then Isai Morales is new. Pom Klementieff, Mantis, is also new.
Yep.
And various more people.
Yeah, we see Henry Jeuny, if I may or may not have his name, returning as Kittredge for the first time since the first film.
I do not remember him.
Fair enough. was he head of the IMF or just he was in the IMF? I can't remember if he's head of it or not.
He's in the
first
collective
film.
Thing.
And now he's in the collective, which is a bunch of heads of things. Let's go through the cast as we often do. Tom Cruise, Ethan Hunt, what a guy. Still got
that
it.
Man doesn't slow down, does he?
If anything, he's speeding up. There was very well publicised him riding his motorbike off a cliff and parachuting away, which happens surprisingly late in the movie, actually.
I mean, like, the only thing which I didn't like about this is that they touted this as like the biggest stunt in the film.
Mm.
And like they showed I don't get why they showed the biggest stunt before they showed the film. Like, I've even seen the behind the scenes of making that stunt way before
long
watching
time
the film.
Before. Yeah, I mean, ever since 5, I think they've started doing that. Because 4, there was all... Maybe they did it for 4 as well, actually. The whole Burj Khalifa climbing up. But 5 was when he was on the outside of a plane going up. And they really pushed that hard in the promos. And that was very early on. That was I think that was pre-credits, actually.
It was, yes.
And then there's always kind of another stunt that happens. So and last time it was the Halo jump. They were going on about the Halo jump. I like the... I kind of like it because it means you know it's real. Because if you watch it thinking, oh, okay, he's actually doing it, it does heighten it a bit. But it is slightly odd that if that's the best thing you've got,
exactly,
you need something else nearly as good to keep interest. But
yeah, I get your point. I get your point because it was building up to that stunt. So much was building up to that stunt. we're probably going to encroach into spoilers territory here, but it was a lot of build up in the film itself to that, and you're like, we know it's going to happen. I've seen it happen countless of times already. Just get on with it and do it.
Yeah, and we'll get to it later, but I guess in spoilers, as you say. But I thought it worked in terms of almost kind of a dramatic irony where the audience knows exactly what's going to happen, and you're sitting there thinking, oh, it's going to happen soon, and he doesn't know it's going to happen. It's going to be great. I did enjoy it when it came up.
I did enjoy it when it came out too.
But otherwise, he's still great. Hayley Atwell, as you say, is new. She's playing a character called Grace.
Or as far as
probably.
She's basically the ingenue, right? The new character. The one who sees IMF for the first time.
Yeah, so she's a civilian. But she gets caught up in the whole Mission Impossible gang. I really liked her in this. I thought she was fantastic. I've never. I mean, I've been a fanfares, I guess, but I never kind of like blown away. But yeah, I think this is the best I've seen her.
And, I think I'll give my opinion on her once we reach the spoilers bit as well.
Yeah, I have some, maybe some of the same thoughts you have. But in terms of jumping in, getting involved,
I think that, yeah, some I think, stuff. You know, I think that's fair. Yeah, I don't know when was the last time we had someone coming in brand new again into the Mission Impossible series, and then she's basically, you know, the person that all new audiences who has no idea what Mission Impossible is.
Yeah,
that's what exposition is for. They're telling her exactly what the Mission Impossible whole thing is all about, and then that's.
Yeah, if there's, I guess maybe a criticism of the Mission Impossible series is that most of the films have brought in a woman who then doesn't come back, or at least doesn't come back in the same way. So I know we saw Michelle Monaghan a few times, and obviously Rebecca Ferguson, this is her third Mission Impossible, I think, now. But yeah, in previous ones, they joined the team and then you just never see them again. Whereas Ving Rhames and Simon Pegg are back doing what they do.
Doing what they do.
Yeah. Ving Rhames doesn't seem to do a lot else than Mission Impossible. I could be wrong. I don't see Ving Rhames around a lot.
I don't think I've seen Simon Pegg in anything else as well for recently.
Well, that's a good point, actually. I can't think of what I've seen him in either. Hmm. No. Well, they've got a job.
For life now, according to Tom Cruise.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Until he's 80, so...
So they've got another 20 years of this. Speaking of Rebecca Ferguson, she's playing... I haven't written down the names of who Ving Rhames and Simon Pegg play. Simon Pegg plays Benji, Ving Rhames plays Luther. There we go, nailed it. Rebecca Ferguson plays Ilsa.
I love Rebecca Ferguson.
Enigmatic.
Yeah, that's a very good word of describing her, really. I love Rebecca Ferguson. I don't think I liked her as much in the previous films, but she was wonderful in this film. I think she's so
interesting. Good. I probably liked her more than the previous ones, actually. I did like her in this. I thought she was great addition when she came in 5 as this kind of rival agent type character, who's kind of, because we had Michelle Monaghan as kind of total civilian who doesn't even know that Ethan Hunt is doing this stuff, and then Rebecca Ferguson came in as basically his equal.
Yep.
I don't think this is a spoiler, but it was fairly clear in the last film that, so when Michelle Monaghan was like, yeah, it's okay, Tom Cruise, you can go off, I've got my new husband, it's fine, that Tom Cruise and Rebecca Ferguson, I'm going to use their actor names, were going to become a couple.
Mm-hmm.
At the start of this film, they are maybe a couple?
No one knows.
I guess we'll come on to some of that. But... yeah, we'll come on to that. Vanessa Kirby, I really like Vanessa Kirby. I think she's a lot of fun.
I love Vanessa Kirby as well. I think she's so good. She hems it up so much as well.
Yes, and you need that. You need someone doing that. I think if they all did that, it'd be terrible. But to have someone who's kind of, as you say, hemming it up, kind of larger than life, you see it quite a lot in Marvel stuff, I suppose. Someone's a bit mocking, a bit over the top. But to see one person doing that and not going too far.
Yeah, I think it works very well in this film as well. She's good fun. I love her.
She plays the White Widow, I think.
Arms dealer.
Yeah, arms dealer. Alana, the daughter of Max, as played by Kristen Scott Thomas in the first film. I think they confirmed that this time. It was mentioned last time that she was the daughter of Max, but they didn't go into details, so you had to know your lore. Isai Morales, Gabriel. I must confess, this is not really a spoiler. He's a villain from Ethan Hunt's past, and they showed a clip of that, and I thought it was from the first film, but it wasn't. It was just some DH stuff.
Was it? Like, at first I saw it as that, because I do not remember the Mission Impossible films as much as probably you do. So I thought, oh, did I miss something here? So it's probably something in the past that I've not seen or I completely forgot. And then I went on his Wikipedia page, and he has never appeared before.
Yeah, it's been a good few years since I saw the first one, so I just assumed he was a guy from the first one. And they say, yeah, he's from before you joined the IMF, blah, blah, blah. And you see Tom Cruise running around with his old hair. But no, he's... I say they DH'd. They kind of DH'd, but they also shot it in shadowy black and white, so they got away with it.
Yeah.
I thought he was a good villain. I still think Philip Seymour Hoffman is by far the best villain they've had in these films.
So I wish they didn't do this whole villain from the past that didn't exist before in our past 6 films and then now suddenly appears kind of thing. I don't think...
Yeah.
Like that?
I know what you mean. Yeah. It feels a bit like where the Daniel Craig James Bond films got to.
Exactly, right? You just shoehorn another one in, then in the next film say, oh, did you forget this villain that you left behind in the past?
Yeah.
I don't like that at
all. I've been orchestrating it all the whole time.
Yeah. Just introduce a new one.
The interesting thing in this, I thought, was that, and again, this is, I guess, a slight spoiler, but although he was a villain from the past, well, they didn't explain that other than showing some footage that wasn't fully explained. And it wasn't really a theme. You didn't hear a lot about their relationship, why they hate each other, or what he did before. And it doesn't seem to be driving Ethan Hunt at all. I don't know whether we'll... You think it was?
Well, I mean, there was this talk between Luther and Ethan Hunt, right? To convince him not to get revenge.
Fair enough, there was. But I guess it wasn't really explained what he was talking about. Maybe we'll get that more next time. I don't know. But no, you're right. I'd forgotten that, actually. Originally, this was going to be Nicholas Holt.
Oh, really?
He had to drop out because of... I think when they have got postponed in COVID, they had, you know, clashing stuff. But it would be a struggle to believe that Nicholas Holt came from Tom Cruise's, or Ethan Hunt's pre-IMF past, because he would have had to be about 3 years old at the time. So, I guess they changed that a fair bit. Pom Clementieff is there.
Yep, she's someone here. She basically works for Isai Morales, Gabriel, character, essentially. She's just a hitwoman.
She is. She plays a character called Paris. Looks great. I thought she was underused in this, although had a good finish, shall we say. As the film wore on, you kind of see, I see why they kept this character in, because I must have been about the halfway point. I was like, why is she here?
Yep.
But you did kind of get to see it all up. As mentioned, Henry Cheoni is back playing Kitteridge for all those people who remember the first film and was solid. It's fine.
You are getting to smaller and smaller roles now.
Yeah. Do you remember Shea Whigham playing Jasper?
That's the two agents.
He's one of them.
Who are trying to chase down Ethan Hunt, right?
Yeah.
I think he's quite funny, though. I think they add some comedy to this whole film series. It's just weird, though, right? Like, Ethan Hunt gets away with everything, and then these two, like, bumbling idiots just trying to catch him.
Yeah, I quite like that. I must admit, I struggled at times to remember who they were, what they were doing. It's like, they're trying to get Ethan Hunt, but I can't remember who they work for or why they're trying to get him. It's fine. That's enough cast.
Way too many casts.
Yeah. Did you notice that this basically has the same plot as Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny? In that the hero is trying to collect two different MacGuffins, which only work if you put them together, and he's also trying to find the third thing that tells you how they work. But there's a villain from his past who we see de-aged earlier in the film who's also trying to get those things, and he's trying to beat them. And he is accompanied and sometimes betrayed and sometimes not betrayed by a fast-talking English woman. It's the same movie.
You see, right, I didn't put that together only because I didn't like Indiana Jones and I quite like this one. So,
yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong, this is a better version of that. But I did wonder, because they've been filming it for years and years, and I did wonder, are they like, this is annoying, they stole our movie.
Yeah, you're right. It makes sense. Although there's no, like, this whole going back into time, whammy-jammy kind of thing.
Yeah, there's no time travel in this one. I think that's not a spoiler.
No, and no Nazis yet.
No, they don't really do real-life villains, do they? Or real-life groups. It's all made-up stuff. Apart from that time they blew up the Kremlin.
Yep.
So we start off with a lengthy intro on a Russian submarine, actually.
Mm. I love the pre-credits intro this time around. It was really good.
Okay.
Yeah, and the whole scene in the submarine, and also the Tom Cruise revealing his mask thing. I think that's quite cool.
Yeah. On the one hand, I like the mask stuff, but it was, I don't know about you, but it was so obvious to me that was Ethan Hunt. As soon as he turned up, as soon as you saw any footage of him at all, I was like, okay, that's Ethan Hunt in a mask. Partly because of his height. I was like, that guy looks quite short. I bet it's Tom Cruise. There were a couple of mask usage in this film, but that was the only one where it was supposed to be a surprise, I think, because the other ones we saw it happening. And it was not a surprise. That was a slight disappointment to me. I would have liked to have had a few more mask twists. Because even in Mission Impossible 2, which is everyone's least favorite Mission Impossible, there was a great mask twist at one point.
Everyone loves a mask twist, to be fair. I mean, this is the whole point of Mission Impossible, right?
The whole point is Tom Cruise trying to kill himself and then people taking off masks.
Yeah, exactly. That's the best bit of Mission Impossible.
It was slightly brave, I guess, to do it. It's quite a long intro before we saw any characters we knew. Yeah, and it built it up nicely. And it also gave us a lot more information than the characters had. Because they were like, what's going on? What is this? Whereas we see this AI thing right from the off and we see what it can do. Yeah.
I think it's really cool. I really love the first scene. I really like the submarine thing. I think it definitely builds the whole plot very well. Builds the tension. It's very good. I like it a lot.
Do you think there's any connection? I don't know if you spotted this. That first scene happened on the 29th of February. They brought up the little date in the corner, which is like a leap year day. And then the, whatever it was in the middle, the kind of AI thing, had a capacity of 366 meters cubed. Is that a link?
Oh my goodness, you're going to Indiana Jones this whole thing now, Colin.
I reckon there's something going on. And then, I mean, we're talking about leap years, we're talking about, and then Tom Cruise leaps off something. Is that what's going on?
I mean, that is, Tom Cruise leaps off everything in the Mission Impossible film, so I don't think that counts.
No, but I just noticed the 29th of February, which is quite an odd choice for a date. And then when they went 366, I was like, something's going on here.
I definitely did not notice that at all.
I'll tweet Christopher McQuarrie and ask him. The action in this is what we're going to see in Mission Impossible 4. Mm-hmm. Masks, Tom Cruise dying, and action. I liked a lot of the action. I think there's a great car chase in Rome. I think it was Rome, which I thought was awesome. Really well put together. I think it's fair to say I didn't love the bit on top of the train. And again, it's in trailers, so it's not a spoiler to know they fight on a train. But in a film that prides itself on doing things for real, it was so obviously not real. Mm-hmm. So that was a shame. Also, it's like Indiana Jones 4.
Yep. There was a car chase in Indiana Jones 4 as well.
Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah, I think my favourite scenes probably were the Rome car chase and the fairly early airport shenanigans.
My favourite scenes were the one in Venice.
Okay.
Yeah, I think because it reminds me a lot of the first Mission Impossible. So the action sequences were more intimate. It's down alleyways and everything. It's not something, it's not bombastic. It's not something grand like going down a Burj Khalifa. It's more close up, and I like that a bit. It did remind me of the first Mission Impossible a lot.
Or was it Venice? The little yellow car?
No, the Venice one when they were all the gondolas and they were chasing the sequences on foot. Yeah, not on cars. That's my favorite scene of all in this. I don't think the action scenes in this film were as good as the previous one.
No, that's fair.
I've said that Mission Impossible Fallout is one of my favorite action films, and I didn't care for Mission Impossible before that film at all. But nothing beats, like, even the fighting scene in between Tom Cruise and Henry Cavill in the bathroom. I thought so much better than any of the action scenes in this film.
You're right. It had some fantastic. I love the motorbike chase in the sixth one as well. But even that had the kind of, that was the underwater thing in that, or was that in five?
That was five.
That was five, because that wasn't great. You're right. It wasn't maybe as good as some, but it's still, when you compare this to any other action, fairness, I've not seen John Wick, which I know people love, but if you compare it to one like a Fast and Furious type thing with where it's all CGI and no one can get hurt at all and it's all just made up very clearly fake, something that still feels visceral. I also do like the fact that you feel like Ethan Hunt might lose that time. Like if he's up against two guys, okay, he'll probably beat them, but it's going to look like it's an effort.
Yep.
It's not just like, punch, punch, we're out of here. It's a kind of, like, he's fighting, at one point in Venice, I think it is, he's fighting two guys
in a small alleyway, yeah.
It's Pom Clementiev and a guy in a small alleyway. And yeah, it feels like it's really difficult for him to get through. And I like that in the Mission films, which he probably lost some of that in Mission 2, but I think they've definitely come back to that. AI is not in the trailers. I think that is a bit of a surprise.
I think I like the idea of a rogue AI, but I think it's mostly used to move the plot along than anything else. Sometimes it can do everything, and sometimes it just doesn't.
Yeah, I thought it was just on the cusp of being too silly for, I mean, the wrong kind of silly for these films. I think it was okay, but if they pushed it an inch further. And you're right, sometimes I thought it was really cleverly used, where it's changing technology to confuse people and to put them off track. And then other times you think, well, if you can do that then, why can't I do it now?
Exactly, right? It makes no sense how it's being used. It's very erratic. It's like sometimes it can do the most complicated things and control satellites, etc.
Yeah.
And sometimes it just cannot find people. Like, why would you make it so difficult for yourself? If you control all technology, you should be able to do anything you want. This is supposed to be a rogue AI, so I don't understand.
Yeah, I think I guess it's slight spoilers, but people aren't watching this for the plot, I think. Or maybe they are, I don't know. I think the idea is it can control some technology, but if you get this magic key, it can control all technology or something. It's a bit vague. It's very vague. Yeah.
Like, there was a part when Benji was in a self-driving car. I thought, oh, this is the time when AI was going to kick in.
Yeah, I thought that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then it didn't. I was like, why?
Maybe we'll come on to a bit more of that in spoilers. I also think, and I know they kind of write these as they go. There's no script. You just turn up and do whatever. But AI, when they started, certainly was nowhere near the big conversation topic it has been for the last year or so.
Mm.
So I guess that played quite well for them. I liked seeing Tom Cruise run across the top of an airport. That was fun.
I like seeing Tom Cruise running.
Yeah, what a guy.
Yeah, like, honestly, his sprints look incredibly fast on camera. It's like, oh, his legs are just pounding.
Yeah, no, I think he has learned the skill of making it look like he's going really fast. He probably is. Yeah, I think most people who are supposed to be sprinting on film are actually just light jogging. Where he's properly sprinting, isn't he?
Yeah.
But yeah, the airport thing, I thought was really nice, really well done, because there are like five different things going on at the same time, and I thought they balanced that really well, because all these different people are trying to track down Ethan Hunt. He's trying to track someone else. There's also other stuff going on that Benji and Luther have got to deal with. I thought that was nicely done. In the interest of time, do you have anything else that's non-spoilery, or do you want to...
Let's go straight to spoilers. Oh, we should say what we feel about the film in
general. Oh, yeah. I don't think it's the best one, by any means. I'd say it's maybe my third or fourth favourite Mission Impossible, but I still had a great time. That there are a couple of decisions, which was coming to in spoilers, that I didn't know why they did that, which maybe also takes slightly the shine off.
Same. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
I like this film. I didn't enjoy it as much as the previous film. I really liked Mission Impossible Fallout a lot. I find it enjoyable. The 3 hours flew by. And I found it surprisingly...
Is it 3 hours?
Yeah.
It does fly by, yeah.
And I found it surprisingly funny at times as well. But yeah, something is... Yeah, and we're going to go talk about it in the spoilers, I think. Yeah. So there we go.
Also, Tom Cruise does some great close-up magic.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Okay, spoilers. Ilsa dies.
I hate that decision so much. I don't like it at all. I think, so, and this is where I come about Hayley Atwell's character. And I think whether you like this character or not rests on how much you think she makes a good replacement for Rebecca Ferguson.
Yeah, I saw someone saying, oh, it's a bit misogynistic to say this is a replacement, but it's not like they're just... I'm not saying that because I agree with you. I wouldn't say it's because it's a woman and a woman. It's because it's clearly the Ethan Hunt love interest.
Yes.
And Hayley Atwell character is... I mean, I think she has fantastic chemistry with Tom Cruise, despite that being a 20-year age gap. So I think they work as a couple, and I'd like to see that. But it just seems like, well, why did you spend the last two films building up Ilsa as Ethan Hunt's love interest? I mean, to go in so far as to having the Michelle Monaghan, Julia character say, as I basically say, yeah, it's fine, move on with your life. And then in this film, we had the kind of a fake out quite early on where you think she's died, although I didn't think she had, but they make it look like she's died. Maybe so that we would definitely think she's dead the second time, but I kind of get killing off a major character to see to show the impact of this. Although I'd have thought it might be Simon Pegg or Ving Rhames rather than Ilsa. I also think Ethan Hunt didn't seem that bothered. I mean, that was a big drawback for me. I think if they're supposed to be a couple, and I think they were supposed to, show us more of that. Show us more of his reaction.
I don't think the resolution was very satisfying in terms of her death at all. Like, these were a team who's worked together for so long and so much. Basically, after her death, it was basically, back to business as usual, guys. Come on. Now we don't have Ilsa anymore, but you are here.
Yeah.
You are here, Grace. Why don't you do it and take her place immediately? Like,
And I don't know, were they trying to avoid accusations of fridging by having him too affected by it?
It is fridging, though.
I don't know, but it still feels like it is. Because she was great addition to the team, but if it's a kind of, I say, if it's to show how powerful this thing is, but even the way it was done, said the AI has guaranteed that someone close to Tom Cruise or to Ethan Hunt will die, and it's either going to be Ilsa or it's going to be Grace. First of all, someone close to him, either the woman who we think is his girlfriend based on the fact they hugged and she leans on his shoulder once, versus someone he's just met.
A stranger, yep.
Yeah. I don't think that... Also, really, are you telling us the AI can tell with 100% certainty that Gabriel wasn't going to be killed in that fight? Because it looked like it was pretty close at times. And that was annoying use of the AI for me. I just don't think that for someone, from a probability point of view, it didn't make any sense.
I know what you mean. I know what I mean. And it annoys me as well because that was my favorite scene of all. The whole entire chase scene and run scene.
Okay. Yeah.
On foot scene and her sacrificing herself. I love the whole thing, but I just didn't like the way it resolved itself in the end.
Yeah. I mean, I guess for me, in principle, I don't mind her dying. As a character. If they'd handled it better. I guess you kind of didn't want to do that at all. So. But it also seems like, is this the third brunette that is going to be paired up with him for... Because if they do put him off with the Haley Atwell, what happens next? Do they do the same thing again?
Basically, like, you are just Leonardo DiCaprio-ing him.
Yeah.
After a certain age, they're gone.
Yeah, basically. And that never felt like that's what Mission Impossible was about before. So that's... It was an odd decision. I really liked Hayley Atwell in this film. I thought she was kind of... She did breathe fresh life into it, and I thought she was great. But didn't need to be done that way.
No. There are better ways to introduce her in.
And I did like the kind of, like... He was saying that her life is... Well, basically, anyone on the team's life is worth more than his own. And she's like, I you just met me. I thought it was a nice scene. But, yeah, where was the mourning of the death of his significant other?
Yeah.
Anyway, she joins the IMF. Apparently, if you do all kinds of crimes and stuff, you can just say, actually, can I join the IMF instead of going to prison?
And then, like, you'll be pardoned for life.
Yeah, and they're like, you're in. But beware, you're probably going to die.
Especially if you are a brunette.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, dear. But yeah, I just say that my favourite scene was where they were handcuffed together going through Rome in that tiny car. That was fun.
That was quite comedic as well. I still remember the point when suddenly the motorcycle just ran into the two guys. I thought that was very funny.
Am I right in saying that I'm jumping around a bit here, but in the opening scene where they've got the two halves of the key and they float to the surface of the water having all died because the submarine exploded itself or shot a torpedo at itself, and then the keys are dangling there, do we know who took the keys?
No, they didn't make it clear.
Yeah, I think that's a mystery for the next film, isn't it?
Yeah, it has to be. Yeah. Although that like after reading all the news about the Titan submarine, I don't think there will be two bodies floating to the surface when a torpedo hits a submarine.
Yeah, probably not.
Two bodies intact.
Yeah, that does seem slightly unlikely.
Very unlikely. Well, but that's the thing, as you say, right? Like, this was filmed way before AI, filmed before the Titan submarines fiasco. Yeah, so...
So we should say Gabriel gets away in the end, but Tom Cruise has got the key.
Unsurprisingly.
And I say, several of them fight on the train, but they're all just standing on the train like it's nothing. And I think at some point, I'm sure Tom Cruise will do a thing where he's genuinely on top of a fast-moving train fighting, and it's going to look much better than that. But.
I really don't like anything that was happening, the fight scenes on the train at all. Like, it was just...
I quite liked it when the train had gone off the edge of the aqueduct, whatever it was.
Bridge. That's the best bit.
And they and both Grace and Ethan are climbing up. I thought that was done well.
Yeah, climbing through different carriages.
Yeah.
And that was really good. And each carriage was different. That was my favorite bit of it. But I really didn't like much of the lead up to it,
no,
really.
No,
like,
idea on that. Yeah.
Something's missing. Like, at first it was like, oh, Grace was like worried about doing this all by herself. And then you see half the time, Tom Cruise was just on a bike while Grace was in the train.
So, and we haven't said the famous jumping over, going off the cliff and on the motorbike with your parachute was because Benji was directing him to get onto the train. And that was the quickest way, was just to go off the edge, which I thought was very funny. I like that. But the fact that he smashed through the window just in exactly the right place to knock out the person who had a gun hurled on Grace was maybe
a step too far.
Unlikely, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's great surprise moment when it happened, but you think, lucky.
It didn't work that well. It didn't work so well. Like, I really like the scene when he jumped off the cliff, but then you don't see anything after that for a long time until Grace was running away, and then, boom, of course he comes in.
Yeah. Oh, you do see him shouting in the air. I like the fact that Tom Cruise was acting in midair. That's pretty cool. Tell you my least favourite part of the entire film, though.
Yeah, go on.
The frequent use of the word put pocket. So Hayley Atwell's character is a pickpocket who steals those things, and he says, you've got to put pocket it back. And they keep saying it as if it's a real word. That annoyed me.
That definitely didn't annoy me as much as it did you.
Okay, there you go. Mission Impossible. I think possibly the reason, one of the reasons this wasn't quite as good as the last one might be they're saving some stuff for the part two. Maybe.
Yeah, it feels like that, definitely.
And can't wait.
If it happens. The strikes are still helping.
Yeah, when Tom Cruise said he's going to go till he's 80, he means he's going to make Mission Impossible 8. It's going to be 20 years of strikes. We move on then to... do you have time to talk about Mutiny on the Bounty?
We can squeeze it in, I think.
Okay. Look back on Oscar, the segment where we talk about a Best Picture Oscar-winning film from the past. This time it is Mutiny on the Bounty, Zijan.
Yep. It's been made a few times. So this is the 1935 film, directed by Frank Lloyd and starring Charles Laughton and Clark Gable. Mm. Not to be confused with the 1962 remake starring Marlon Brando, which was also nominated for Best Picture. But it was a box office flop.
Which one did Marlon Brando play, do you know?
I'm pretty certain he played the hero.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah, but I hear he was at the point in his career where he was just canning in. And he was just being lazy all that. So the film, the 1935 film, receives 8 nominations at the 8th Academy Awards, winning only Best Picture. This is the only film to have 3 Best Actor nominations. As a result of this, actually, the Best Supporting Actor category was created for the Oscars in the following year.
Yeah. So you say very early days to the Oscars, they're still figuring things out.
Yeah, exactly. This is a heavily, and I say heavily fictionalized story of the real-life mutiny led by Fletcher Christian, who is played by Clark Gable, against William Bligh, played by Charles Laughton, captain of the HMAV Bounty in 1789.
Apparently it was the last film to win Best Picture, but no other Oscars, although it was the third film to do so. So 3 of the first 8. I guess they didn't have many Oscar categories in the early days. So
this is a good trivia for future quizzes, really.
Yeah. As you say, heavily fictionalized. I thought this was really good, actually.
Me too.
I know I keep saying this for older films. Like, I'm amazed. They made good films in the past. But great performances from the main two, Clark Gable and Charles Laughton, as the hero and villain, effectively. Incredible... I don't know, effects, I suppose. They seem to be on a ship a lot of the time. I don't know how much it was done for real, how much not, but I was kind of expecting a guy in front of a badly composited onto a picture of some sea or something. But no, it's all very well put together. And I have to say, he does very much go on the gentlemen are great and commoners are bad kind of thing, because like Captain Bligh is a commoner and he makes quite a big deal of it to start off with, and it does seem to be of its time in that respect, but otherwise I had a great time with it.
No, me too. I enjoyed this more than I thought I would. There's actually a story in this film,
yes,
unlike like The Greatest Show on Earth. which we saw recently. Which didn't have much of a plot. But no, I think William Bligh makes a very perfectly hateable villain.
Yeah, so he's flogging people for the smallest thing. He's keel hauling people. He's making them go stay up in the crow's nest in horrendous weather. None of which was true.
No, it's true at all. I was reading as well, like, at the end, in the final scene of the film, Christian gave a rousing speech to his fellow mutineers, speaking of creating a perfect society of free men on Pitcairn. In reality, they enslaved the Tahitian man.
Yeah, it's a shame, isn't it?
So, yeah. I mean, if you just ignore all those historical inaccuracies, It's a good film in its own right.
Yes. Yeah. So worth checking out. Cool. You got an actor factor for next time, Zijan?
I've chosen Idris Elba, but I'm not sure whether we've done him before.
I think so.
We have. Maybe.
Okay, next time we'll be looking at the films of Idris Elba, and we finish, as we always do, with a quiz, which will be this time on the Superman films of Christopher Reeve. Mm-hmm. The fun thing in this, Zijan, is my first three questions, the answers are all films.
What?
Here we go. The co-writer of Superman and Superman 2, who also wrote the story, is better known for co-writing which trilogy?
What?
The co-writer of Superman and Superman 2.
I'm going to go to Back to the Future because I know you like it.
Oh, wow. No, The Godfather. It's Mario Puzo.
I didn't know that. What's this? Why are you asking about other films?
It's a question about the screenwriter.
Is it really?
I mean, yes. Come on.
You're already leading this this year as well, Colin. I don't know why. Question one. Which song recorded by Maureen McGovern is commonly used as a leitmotif when Lois and Superman find themselves alone together?
No idea. Lois's theme.
Can you read my mind?
Oh, of course it is.
Of course it is. That's the only song you know from the Superman series.
It's true. Superman was the second highest grossing movie of 1978. Beaten by which musical film?
1978? It's like Grease or something.
It is precisely Grease, yes. Good one.
Question two. In Superman 2, what causes the release of General Zod and his comrades from the Phantom Zone?
Ooh.
I know you've seen all the films. I haven't seen any.
I have. I should know this. Does it... Superman 2. Does it get hit by a rogue missile?
It's the shockwave of a hydrogen bomb thrown by Superman. Does it count?
That's kind of what I was going for.
I'll give you half a point.
Ooh, is that a thing?
No. We'll see how this quiz ends first before I decide whether I give you a point.
All right.
I don't know. Did it happen? I can't. Get hit by a missile?
Huh? I mean, you got. I can't remember. I was thinking it was a missile that he'd thrown, but whether you allow being hit by missiles being hit by shockwaves from a missile.
You're leading 4-0 this quiz. I'll give you a 0. That's fine.
Okay, fine. But I'm going to Google it after. The producers of which 1979 movie threatened legal action over the original title for Superman 3?
Yeah, Screamer was the Screamer.
Very good.
Because my third question is, what was the original title of Superman 3? Which was changed.
Superman versus Superman.
Yeah.
Question four. In Superman 2, Clark rescues Lois at which North American landmark?
In Superman 2?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've not seen any of these. I'm going to go with Empire State Building.
The Niagara Falls.
Yeah, I read that. Question four. What were the two Golden Raspberry nominations Superman 4 received?
Oh, I have no idea. It's probably worst film and worst supporting actor.
Worst supporting actress.
Oh, really?
Worst visual effects.
Okay. In which case, to win, who voiced Nuclear Man in Superman 4?
Who voiced?
Yeah.
Superman 4. I mean... I'm just going to go with Christopher Reeve, right?
It's not by guess, but it was Gene Hackman.
My last film. Of the four films, only one of them did not have any scenes in Smallville. Which one was it?
Ooh, okay. Well, the first one definitely did. The third one definitely did. So it's between 2 and 4, and I'm pretty sure 4 did, because I think they didn't go back to small the set that was still standing because they wanted to save money on flights or something. So I'm going to say Superman 2.
That's correct.
Which means it's a draw. I will take the draw slightly ungraciously after your
cruel Why would marking. You do that?
No, what are we quizzing on next time, Zijin?
Have you done the Kingsman films?
Let me get my spreadsheet open and I will tell you.
I feel like we have.
I feel like we have as well, but we might not have done. Kingsman.
Because I do not have an alternative.
No, we did a podcast episode on Kingsman 2, but good. we haven't done a quiz on them. And I've confirmed we also haven't done Idris Elba. So that's what we'll do next time. What's our main topic for next time, Zijin?
I'm a Barbie girl. I'm a Barbie girl.
Yes, but what's our main topic for next time?
We are looking at a new Margot Robbie film, Barbie. Who knows, this will be the last film we'll see for a long, long time.
Unless we go and see Oppenheimer.
Yeah, that's true.
Who knows? We'll see you then.
Bye.